Welcome to the Crime Scene Time Machine. Just a little bit of housekeeping before we get into the official introduction to the episodes. We have now started a Patreon account, patreon.com/crimescenetimemachine. And if you enjoy our episodes, we would ask you to make a contribution. A cup of coffee costs $8. And I don't know how many times you stop off at Starbucks and get a large cappuccino or something like that. If you think our episode is worth $8 or $5, we would ask that you make a contribution. We are a nonprofit organization, and your donations will be used to create further educational episodes. So if you're interested and you want to help us out in improving how we deliver our episode to you, I would ask you to go to patreon.com/crimescenetimemachine and make a donation of $8. We appreciate any consideration. Thank you very much. And now let's start the show. Welcome to another episode of Crime Scene Time Machine. I'm your host, Scott Roeder, and I love you, planet Earth, and everybody on it. I had an entire introduction already planned for this episode, and I deleted it, and I'm going to give you this introduction instead. There is a threat in the world, and everybody's telling us to look at this threat, right? The Palestinians are a threat. Russia's a threat. Global warming is a threat. Other countries are a threat. The Republicans are a threat. These LGBTs are a threat. All of these are things that are a threat, right? Music is a threat. The devil is a threat. All these things are a threat. However, I think they've all got it wrong, because the threat is coming from inside the house. The call is coming from inside of the house. And when I say the call is coming from inside of the house, I mean the threat is coming from the House of Representatives of the United States Congress, because they've been influenced by AIPAC and other ultra-Zionist lobby groups with guaranteed re-election money for their campaigns if they support this regime and they support this situation of this colonial occupier and former victim of World War II. The victim often becomes the victimizer. And it's sad to say that the tragedy of the history of the Jewish people is being diminished by the atrocities of the current Israeli government. There's nothing that anybody in the world can do to make people anti-Semitic more than what the Israeli government is doing right now. The only regime, person, entity, governmental, or otherwise responsible for the rise in anti-Semitism is the actions of the Israeli government. Now, how do we, as people who are trying to raise our consciousness and not get caught up in the us versus them? I don't want to be against anybody. I don't want to be against the Jews. I don't want to be against Israel. I don't want to be against America. I don't want to be against our politicians. And I've been told, and I'm trying really hard, to just be an observer. Try to be fair. Try to tell the truth. And it's so hard to not be biased with your own personal prejudice, with the type of media you consume, so on and so forth. That being said, I have deleted the majority of my 25-minute opening, and I have instead found and researched some clips, both video and audio, that I feel gives a better perspective about what's going on right now in the world, particularly with Israel and Palestine over in Gaza, than I could ever possibly address myself. So we're going to play a series of clips. All right, so now we'll start the show.
The shifts, the changing of frequency, there is no way to slow that down. There is no way to stop this rise of the Earth's frequency, Schumann frequency, whatever you want to call it. There is no way to stop it. And the Earth is absolutely committed to her evolvement because she's a living being. The other planets in our solar system, I'm not aware of any of them wanting to blow up or to disintegrate. They're also moving with the sun through this frequency shift or shifts in frequency. Okay, this is going to happen. This really is going to happen. The key to truly understanding what's happening is to remain the observer. And I know that's going to be hard. I know that's going to be hard because, you know, the regressives, they're pricks. They're going to pull every trick out of the book. They're going to do everything that's despicable. Well, they're not actually doing it themselves. They're moving chess pieces on the planet, using us against us to do these horrible, horrific things until they bring in the savior, the Antichrist, or whatever you want to call him. It. Okay, it's more of an it. Okay.
Good morning, folks. Today we'll be hitting just two things: the solar flare from yesterday and possible CME impact coming from it, and the paper shared during last night's live stream, which I hadn't seen yet. The Air Force is aware of and terrified about the coming pole shift. We're starting with the last 24 hours on our star, and we find that the day began pretty much right after the morning show with an impulsive solar flare from the sunspot group that's beginning to depart. A few other minor pops occurred, and we've got several plasma filaments to keep an eye on. And although impulsive, the flare did appear to have a significant working of the local corona, and a faint CME signature can even be seen on SOHO as well. The initial NASA endless spiral for the event shows a potential glancing blow from the weak CME towards the middle to latter part of the week. It'll be relevant, but not scary. Wish I could say the same thing for our top science today. During the live show last night, someone asked me if I knew about this paper. I did not. It is only posted in the military archive from a captain at the Air Force who is also studying geomagnetism and Earth risk. It's all about our key long-term topic here at the channel, the ongoing geomagnetic excursion, the magnetic pole flip. It caught my interest right off the bat. While we know the magnetic field has declined probably 25-30% since 1859, this paper is suggesting we've lost about 40% over the last 400 years. The field shift has accelerated to 10 times that which we previously thought, and it has major implications for the Earth, including the biosphere. They hit the grids, major issues in agriculture, and to human health. They then end up concluding that we are absolutely not prepared for this event, which is something I definitely agree with and have heard from pretty much every serious scientist in the field over the last decade, especially since most of the focus and funding is currently going to a different kind of environmental change on Earth right now. Folks, this requires a deep dive, and I'll be bringing that to you later today. Come back around 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific for a more significant breakdown of this work in tonight's special video. We greatly appreciate your support. We'll do this all again tomorrow, right here, but right now it's 5:30 a.m. in the new Valley of the Sun. Eyes open. No fear. Be safe, everyone.
I speak of peace, therefore, as the necessary rational end of rational men. I realize the pursuit of peace is not as dramatic as the pursuit of war, and frequently the words of the pursuers fall on deaf ears.
This call for a ceasefire is nuts. What would we have said to a group that asked us to have a ceasefire after 9/11?
Do you have any empathy with the Palestinian position?
I have zero empathy to people that time after time refuse to recognize the right of the Jewish state to their homeland, the Jewish people in their homeland.
We are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice.
And so we really have a TikTok problem, a Gen Z problem, because again, like, we've been chasing this left-right divide. It's the wrong game. The real game is the next generation, that our community needs to put the same brains that gave us Tagli, the same brains that gave us all these other amazing innovations, need to put our energy toward this.
I had friends in the Kennedy administration, and I think they had deep suspicions of the Israelis. You know, they wouldn't sell arms to the Israelis for a long time. In 1954, we passed the Arms Control Act, and I remember that act says that when any foreign nation to which we have given weapons invades a foreign country, we will withdraw the weapons. Well, when Israel invaded Lebanon, I was in the House. And all we had wonderful colleagues, Jewish members of Congress, but they didn't dare speak out and enforce the law against Israel. We should have pulled the weapons when Israel invaded Lebanon. We didn't. And that that influence of all the lobbies in America, is, I would say, well, if you put the oil lobby and say, okay, they're a 2, and the NRA is a 3, and the Right to Life people are a 4. Israel, the Zionist lobby, you'd put up at 1,000. I mean, the power, because they tell all of the Jewish citizens of America, you're not a good Jew unless you support Israel. We have the first Jewish nation. We're on the front lines. You Americans have to support Israel. And the way you support Israel is you make sure that any elected member of Congress is pro-Israel.
There's a really good reason why, when you criticize Israel, you're called an anti-Semite. A few days ago, The Nation reported Benjamin Netanyahu's media strategy in America ramped up in 2015 when he assembled a secret task force in Vegas to wage a propaganda campaign. Netanyahu leaned on a multi-billionaire Zionist named Sheldon Adelson to host at the Venetian Hotel. The Nation reports that even though it was supposed to be secret, it got leaked. During the meeting, Sheldon Adelson read a letter from Netanyahu, quote, "Delegitimization of Israel must be fought. And you are on the front lines. The Israeli government is committed to launching assertive and innovative programs and to joining you and many others around the world to combat the lies and slander that are leveled against us." Netanyahu was trying to take aim at a growing assortment of college students, human rights advocates, even influencers rallying against Israeli apartheid through boycotting, divesting, and sanctioning Israel. The BDS movement had been growing. Among its biggest supporters was Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who battled against apartheid alongside Nelson Mandela. The Nation goes on to report, Netanyahu's move to counter these protesters in America was basically to buy political power. If he had support in Washington, he could create laws to make it a crime to boycott Israel.
And this could be won through endless phony accusations of anti-Semitism, as well as branding nonviolent boycotters as terrorists.
The group that he assembled, who met at the Venetian Hotel in Vegas, would become a task force of billionaires whose objective was to launch a political and psychological war targeting Americans. In the first night, that task force raised $50 million. Now, the problem with the meeting was that these billionaires were doing something potentially criminal, because they could be agents of a foreign power, punishable up to a decade in prison. American donors were then approached by an Israeli psychological warfare firm. It had connections to the Mossad, and it was codenamed Project Butterfly. The Nation reports that the proposal outlined a secretive operation whose purpose was to damage Americans and American organizations associated with the BDS movement. It would disrupt activities, lead to false investigations, hidden media campaigns. According to its own operation plan, Project Butterfly was aimed at, quote, "executing intelligence and influence efforts against Americans by creating an infrastructure for narrative warfare." In other words, by creating fake news outlets, phony Facebook personas, and posts, and other forms of information warfare, Psy Group's goal was to deliberately deceive the American public about Israel and its actions against Palestinians. They targeted individuals like students and faculty with unwarranted investigations and charges of anti-Semitism. The guy in charge of this secret operation, Gilad Erdan, is now Israel's ambassador to the UN. The Nation reports that in one talk that the Psy Group gave to Israeli Americans, they said, quote, "In order to win, we must use tricks and craftiness. That includes threats, intimidation, harassment, covert influence, troll farms, fear-mongering, blacklists. They even spied on Americans. What we've done is mapped and analyzed the whole boycott phenomena globally. Not just the United States, not just campuses, but labor unions and churches. We started to establish a project called Israeli Cyber Shield. This is actually a civil intelligence unit that collects, analyzes, and acts upon the activists in the BDS movement, of its people, organizations, and events. We give it everything we collect, using the most sophisticated data system, intelligence system in the Israeli market." Around the same time, Israel's Ministry of Strategic Affairs budgeted another $570,000 to create a computer and smartphone application that would turn tens of thousands of Americans into an internet army of Israeli trolls. The Nation goes on to say that the agents involved are granted virtual immunity from arrest by pressure on top politicians on the Hill. The pro-Israel groups like AIPAC are just too wealthy. But it's a situation that greatly frustrates many in the FBI. It means bureau personnel are constantly required to close their eyes when it comes to criminal activity by Israel. They even quote a former top FBI counterintelligence officer named I.C. Smith. They said, quote, "Dealing with the Israelis was, for those assigned that area, extremely frustrating. The Israelis were supremely confident that they had the clout, especially on the Hill, to basically get away with just about anything." For context, in June, the UN called out 35 US states over laws banning anti-Israel bias. Over the years, Israeli intelligence increased its secret war on innocent Americans, and likewise paid less attention to Hamas.
It's a tremendously powerful lobby, and what it's doing, it's endangering us going to war, because Israel would like us to go to war against Iran, as we went to war against Iraq, as we went to war against Syria. Israel views the Arab world, and properly so, as its enemies. So anything it can do, including the development of nuclear weapons, they hold the Arab cities hostage because they have nuclear weapons.
Do you think Israel wants to kill innocent civilians?
I do.
You think Israel generally wants to
kill? I do.
What evidence do you have of that?
The evidence is they are refusing to do special operations and instead are relying on bombing areas where they know civilians are at, and then they'll turn around and say, "Well, Hamas is using them as human shield."
So if someone was
if an armed man grabbed a family member of yours, do you have kids?
No, I don't.
Oh, do you have? Okay, your mother. You talked about your mother. If an armed gunman grabbed your mother, had a gun to her head, okay, and he is confronted by the authorities, by law enforcement. And law enforcement, they just decide, you know what, we're not going to negotiate, we're not going to do anything. We're just going to shoot the hell out of both of them. And then they come to you and say, "Well, your mother, sorry, was a human shield." Would you accept that argument?
That's not the question, though.
Would you accept that argument?
You're making up a random story that, what, my mother is held captive?
Hamas using Palestinians as human shields is not a justification to indiscriminately bomb the hell out of that region, knowing full well that the majority of people who are going to end up dying are not Hamas militants who are underground in the tunnels, okay? Okay, it's the innocent civilians who are going to lose their lives.
They won't sign the Nuclear Anti-Proliferation Treaty, but you won't hear a member of Congress saying we should be concerned about Israel. Israel will always do what is best for Israel.
I was taught that Israel were the victims and that these Palestinian people were like almost like these annoying people who would not leave them alone.
As I keep researching and learning about what's happening in Palestine right now, I can't stop crying.
This is a call in to all Jews who support Palestine. When did you realize that the Zionist mythology of Israel was a lie?
Then why do so many Jews support Israel despite it committing war crimes against Palestinians? And the truth is, we're not fed accurate information.
Because despite all these things that are happening in Gaza, I've not seen any footage of Palestinian people cursing Jewish people or Israeli people.
Seeing what is happening in Palestine right now, and seeing how these Palestinians literally are thanking God as they're losing everything, I would be questioning my faith if my entire family just got wiped off.
I remember we had a Marine colonel in Lebanon who was captured and tortured and killed. And then we learned that the Israelis knew this in advance, but they didn't tell us. The Lawan affair back in, I think, the 50s, we had a U.S. information library in Egypt. And the Jewish ran a raid and to burn the library down and to pin it on Egyptians so that Americans would be angry with Egypt and in favor of Israel in its contest with Egypt.
Here's my Israeli passport. Here's my Israeli ID. And Army exemption card. I didn't serve in the Army. Last week, I submitted an application to renounce my Israeli citizenship in the consulate here in Toronto. It wasn't a decision I made lightly. I've been thinking about it for a long time. In fact, from the moment I learned about the real history of the place where I grew up, the history that wasn't taught to us in schools or even talked about while I was living there, until last week at the consulate, it's been a really long process that took 2 decades. Yes, I did it in response to Israel's horrific assault on Gaza. But since this isn't the first time that Israel is bombing Gaza, why now? Why this moment? Because the amount of casualties has reached catastrophic proportions, and even though we're in a temporary ceasefire or pause or whatever you want to call it right now, it seems like it's not going to end anytime soon. And even Israeli officials are saying that after the pause, they intend to keep bombing for 2 more months at least. Whether Israel realizes it or not, all this death harms its own people as well. It feels like Israel is playing a game, even right now, the situation right now, using words like winning, trying to one-up the other side as much as possible, even though the context is thousands of dead civilians. Israeli soldiers make mocking TikTok videos on top of the ruins of Palestinian homes in Gaza. Why am I doing this now? Because more than ever, it's clear to me now that in Israel, peace is not the goal. And I don't know if it ever was. And when I think back on my childhood and all the times we spent running in and out of the bomb shelter, all the times my parents were worried about us, all the time I spent worrying while putting on a brave face like we were encouraged to, I feel like it's the kind of state that doesn't care about its own people. And I'm not even talking about all the torture, abuse, and humiliation inflicted upon Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza, or Palestinians with Israeli citizenship that Israel loves to use as some sort of proof that it's not an apartheid state. I'm talking about the way Israel treats its own people. I haven't considered myself an Israeli citizen or even Israeli for so long that I'm actually surprised that it took me this many years to get to this point, and I was a little bit embarrassed. But I think I know why it took me so long. Israel spends so much time and money inciting its own people against each other, family members, friends, neighbors. This decision is going to affect my life, my ability to visit the place where I grew up. It's going to affect my relationship with my family, my relationships with the people closest to me, not just there, but here in Canada. I spent the past few weeks crying over witnessing horrific, heartbreaking death and pain, but also grieving over the possibility that I may lose my relationship with my family. And there are many of us in this position, and we don't even live there, but the poison of that incitement is affecting us as well. I don't want anything to do with it. I don't want to be part of it. I don't want to be connected to it. I want you to take the time to imagine what has to happen for you to reject a citizenship and a passport. Everything that led to this decision, the process that led to this decision, was filled with pain and anger and grief. But this decision is necessary. I'm done.
Well, then it turned out the Israelis had done it themselves. But they had lied and they had cheated and they had put a fire to U.S. property in order to develop U.S. public opinion. So I'm not very happy with the influence of the Zionist lobby. The Jewish people are wonderful. They're great philanthropists, they're leading artists, they're great writers, they have a heart, they're good people. But this thought that as an American Jew you have an obligation to the first Jewish state could lead us into World War III. And I'll give you the example. When we formed our government in 1976, we couldn't get the 13 colonies together unless they agreed to the slavery in the southern states, Virginia, South Carolina, all those states. Well, that flaw that, yes, every man is equal, but a black person is only 60% of a human being for purposes of taxation, representation. 80 years later, we fought one of the worst wars in history, our Civil War, because of that flaw in our original formation. But when Israel came into existence in 1948, there were to be two states, a Palestinian and an Israeli state. But they had that flaw that to have a Jewish state, they had to have their own slaves, in this case the Arabs. There's no way you can consider them a democracy when their Arab population doesn't have the same right as their Jewish population. So they could have 80 years. They were formed in 1948. What will it be, 2032, that they'll have their 80th year. And I suspect that that flaw in the formation of Israel may lead to the terrible war like our Civil War back in 1861.
It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed.
Careful of what you say about Israel. Any believer going against Israel, you are making yourself an enemy against God.
If you are against Israel, you are an enemy against God.
Unanimously approved this bill, which would force TikTok to divest from their Chinese investors, become an American company. The interesting thing is, so this bill they're proposing, I was wrong the other day when we were talking about how it would give the president the power to declare a website or app a foreign adversary. I was under the impression it was specifically TikTok. That appears not to be the case. The bill gives the president the authority to declare an adversary under certain criteria. If a website, app, operator, or otherwise is being run or is associated with an adversary to the United States, then they can activate severance and seize control or shut it down. That is very, very bad, and we should not support this. I think it's important that everybody reads through it. Thomas Massie tweeted about it because it would shut down VPNs. It would shut down Telegram. It wouldn't just shut down TikTok. It would shut down any chance you have of speaking freely outside the control of the U.S.
I've seen so many posts from well-meaning Christians, godly people, and they mean well. And I've seen this everywhere. I stand with Israel. I want to challenge you today to stand with Jesus. Now, Jesus loves Israel. Jesus loves the Jews. Jesus hates what happened this week. It was grotesque, and there's nothing moral about killing children and babies. It's disgusting. And anybody who stands with that, they stand with the devil. But I want you to stand with Jesus. And so I want you to learn when you're talking with your friends, when you're engaging on social media, even as you sit here in church with maybe somebody who's curious about Jesus, but they're Muslim or they're from the Middle East and they have a very different perspective than you do of how this whole conflict rages and why it rages.
If you speak to an Israeli or a Jew about this, and you speak to a Palestinian, you'd be like, there's no way you guys are speaking about the same conflict. For example, there's the word that you see thrown around all the time, Zionism, this concept that there should be a Jewish state, right? If you're Palestinian, calling someone a Zionist, that is a negative word. Like you say, are you a Zionist? If you ask a Jewish person if they're a Zionist, they're just interpreting that as, Do I believe that Israel should exist? Well, yeah, of course, I believe Israel should exist. But what does the state of Israel mean to a Palestinian?
It means you're pushing me off my land, you're gonna keep taking away my rights.
It stands for the oppression, it stands for the occupation, right? It's like, I'm a patriot, I love America. A Native American has a different interpretation of my patriotism.
Yeah.
My patriotism represents the eradication of their people and the removal of them from their land. So if a Native American asks me, are you a patriot? I go, hell yeah, love America. They're like, how could you love America?
Let us not be blind to our differences, but let us also direct attention to our common interests and the means by which those differences can be resolved. And if we cannot end now our differences, at least we can help make the world safe for diversity. For in the final analysis, our most basic common link is that we all inhabit this small planet. We all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's futures, and we are all mortal. And that is the most important topic on Earth, peace. What kind of a peace do I mean, and what kind of a peace do we seek? Not a Pax Americana, enforced on the world by American weapons of war. Not the peace of the grave, or the security of the slave. I am talking about genuine peace, the kind of peace that makes life on Earth worth living, the kind that enables men and nations to grow and to hope and build a better life for their children. Not merely peace for Americans, but peace for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
And what is amazing, absolutely amazing, is that Khrushchev heard it, was carried away, summoned the U.S. envoy, Kennedy's envoy, to Moscow, April Harriman, and said, this is the finest speech by an American president since FDR. I want to make peace with your president.
So I appreciate you guys sticking through this episode. It turns out it was only about 36 minutes long. There were some clips after further consideration that I deleted because I really felt that they were just too inflammatory. I know I didn't really put a emphasis on the Israeli side of this conflict because I personally feel there's no defense to it. And I really don't want to put that out into the universe. I know a lot of people are going to be upset with this. And I guess that's okay. My intention is good. I really just want peace. And I guess we all have to ask ourselves, you know, how do we want to contribute in a positive way to the dialogue that in some way could be helpful? And I'm not sure if I can be helpful, and I'm probably not going to do any more episodes about this particular subject. This is probably my last Israeli-Gaza episode that I'm going to dedicate a whole show to. I might cover some breaking news from time to time, but I think we're going to, you know, maybe our next episode is going to be a little lighter, probably try to bring a little bit of smiles to the world, and in a world that we live in like this, we could all use a few more smiles. So, until next time, I've been your host, Scott Roeder. This is Crime Scene Time Machine, and I love you. See you next time.